Evidently, I was on for preaching tonight. I just found that out last night. Luckily, Paul Yoder checks his midweek emails, and he informed me of that, so I had at least a day to prepare for a little bit. But I'm generally one who likes to more or less talk about, you know, things that, you know, are pertaining to your life at that particular moment in your life. You know, those are things that you dwell upon a lot. They're something that affects you. They're something that you meditate on a lot. So I'd like to discuss something with you this evening that's, at least for the last maybe month or two, maybe longer, that is something that's come up a lot on both extremes of the coin. It's a concept of a continuum of your religion of the love versus the law, where you have, in many circumstances, extreme on both sides, where you'll find people dwelling in. You'll find a lot of people in the more charismatic community that dwells like closer to the far left, where you'll find that most people, what they believe about Jesus, about God, about the Bible, it's based on more feelings. How do I feel about it? How does that make me feel? Versus actual biblical writings, biblical law. But of course, then you'll have the other extreme, where you'll have more the stoic, hard-nosed, you know, you need to follow this by the letter, and then they take the law very seriously. But in this taking the law seriously, a lot of things that they overlook are the issues pertaining to the heart, which are also equally as important. The Bible tells us a lot of times that there's a median that you have to draw, where you follow this straight and narrow path, where you neither drift to the left or to the right. But a lot of times people, whether they choose to or not, or believe they do or not, they will fall to one side of this or the other, but without really being honest with themselves and knowing that they are. I mean, they probably, I doubt that they seriously do this on purpose, choosing to do this, because who would choose to do wrong because they just rather do that? Most of the time, people have a way of trying to fool themselves into thinking that the way that they've got it is right, without it having any basis on anything that's really more solid than how they feel about it. You know, one extreme is more common in certain situations than the others. Like, you notice a lot more of the more charismatic denominations out there. That's a big thing these days, is, you know, the feel-good religion, how does this make me feel? It's all about your emotions and how does this affect you. You know, where emotions are good, they make this their primary focus, and that if the emotional experience is, you know, the most important part of the worship, that, you know, if it didn't affect, you know, your feelings, then it did you no good. But of course, you have another aspect of it, which would be the other far extreme, where you have the idea that, you know, the law and the letter of the law is absolutely important. And where that is true, just as the issue of heart is true, you'll have certain people that they just can't seem to get past the issue of law. So the idea is that, well, I do everything that's required of me. You know, I do this, this, and this. I don't do this, this, and this. So a lot of times the issue with the religion becomes more about what you don't do than what you do. And it's less about a lot of those issues with, you know, the heart issue, where you have this earnest desire and this want to serve God and worship. And it comes more of a straight duty, where this is required of me, I know I need to do this, so I do this. But it's not so much an issue of drive and a willingness. It's more of an issue of, if I don't do this, I'm going to be punished in the end. That if I don't do this, I will indeed be condemned to hell. Which, that is true. But I come from probably about three generations of churchgoers. But the one thing I always knew growing up is that the side that I came from and the congregations around the area that I came from, and probably the vast majority of the ones I came from, a big problem would be more to the latter, the right side, where the law is very important. And indeed, the law is very important, and doing the right thing with the letter of the law is a very important issue. But the thing I noticed is that, especially even among my family, is that it seemed to be one of those things that it stopped and started at the door with the church. You know, you did what was required of you. You abstained from the things that you were required to. You did the things that you needed to, but that's where it ended with your Christianity. So I've noticed, you know, I even brought this up with my dad this week, and it's like, all our life growing up, I never really remember you ever reading from the Bible. Never remember you studying it. You always said the things that, well, you need to, you know, have a knowledge of the scriptures, you need to understand, you need to come to believe it yourself, but the things that he was saying, the things that he was doing were two different things. He would say that this is, it's good for you to come to a knowledge of the Bible yourself, and that you accept it yourself, and you make it a part of you. But where that end is was, if you actually did something, if you read something in the scriptures and become more knowledgeable in yourself, what it was, that was something different. I don't think he did it on purpose. I really doubt that. But it was one thing that he just wasn't motivated for, self-reflection, and it's more about, this is what I was always told, so this has to be true. He came up in a Church of Christ family, so he's solid in what teachings that he's always had, but the thing was, I tried to bring this up with him, it's like, but you've never really studied for yourself. So how do you really know? I mean, you have a good idea where things were, you've been told this, so you believe this, it sounds good, but anybody can make that argument. I mean, that's the same argument, most people that grew up in a, far extreme denominational church makes, is that same argument that, this is, it's what I've been, always been told, so it must be true, because no one would lead me to believe something that wasn't true. So a lot of times that's just masking the same argument, but you just are so clouded in your own little world that you just can't see that you're, accusing other people of the same thing that you're doing yourself. And that's always a hard thing to get past, and I've noticed that because I've talked with a lot of people recently on both sides of the extreme. I've talked with the extreme religious zealous they're extremely motivated. I mean, they have a passion for God and for spreading the word, and they're really evangelical. But the thing is, when you get to the point of the matter, it was like, well, where do you get that? How do you know that? Well, what about this? What about this? You bring up points of Bible, and it's easy to gloss over just because it's tradition, and this is something we've always done, so somebody who knows more than me has studied this, so they know it, so I can take their word for it. But one of the diverging points where I've, at least in the last couple of so years, have diverged from family traditional practice is that I take the Bible very seriously in the study of self-study. I found that the more you study yourself and read things for what they are, it pierces you more, that you can see things far deeper than you ever imagined just listening to your sermons on Sunday, going to Bible class. I mean, that's a good basis. I mean, it's a good start, and you can have, good discussions, good conversations. But, I mean, just leafing through the pages, I mean, I'm surprised at how often I come up with something that's just like shocking. It's like, in all the years I've been in the church, and I've grew up in the church, it's like, how have I never seen this? How have I never heard this? I mean, it's just surprising. And this is one thing I talk about with most people when I, you know, say, you know, like, try to push them further, more study, is that, you know, you need to be able to read it for yourself, because, I mean, if you're a very honest person, and that's where the key is honesty, because most people, they might think they are, but if you're actually honest with yourself, and you have a love of truth above everything else, you'll take it for what it is. Because that's what it has to be for an honest heart, for somebody to really be accepting of the truth. That's what I've seen with a lot of people I've argued with, is that unless they have a earnest want to know what the truth is, it is really difficult, if not impossible, to have any sway with them. It's only the people that are really honestly searching for what's right. And you don't care what's right. You don't, you know, you care what's right, but you don't care what it is. You don't care what the truth is. You just want to know it. You want to see it. Like the Bereans, you know, they were always people that, you know, they weren't exactly always trusting. They were like kind of like the Missourians of the ancient world, where, you know, show me, where is it? It's like, so they would go and search to see if these things were true themselves. And that's what, you know, great many of the honest Christians will do, is have that self-study. And all of my time studying the last 2 years, I probably learned more about the Bible from my own reading, from my own delving into the scriptures and to chewing on it and seeing for its context and what it has. It's been more potent to me than all those years before, where I was just taking what was force-fed because it sounded like a good argument. More to the extreme with the other side is something I really didn't know a lot of being growing up in the churches, because one thing you can say about, you know, the Church of Christ is like, it's not, definitely is very difficult to find very extreme charismatic zealots, as you would see in most of those Sunday morning shows where they have the extreme emotional connection, where you have this big carnival almost of show and of pomp and of just to get a religious feeling. That is something I've seen a little bit in the recent times, but I don't really know too much experience with it, but I've seen some of it where, and I've had family that's been part of these different groups where they're big into, you know, feeling good. They have their big praise bands or big concerts. They have all these spectacles and all these shows. But there's a very down emphasis on scripture. I mean, they say they are seriously about the Bible, and they're serious about scripture and about what it says. But if you have a serious talk with some of these people, and you bring up, you know, some common facts about the Bible, a lot of them seem to just have the same pre-programming that you would, you know, come to expect from, you know, most extreme left-wing individuals in that charismatic movement, is that they have a way of trying to gloss over the truth, to skip over it, and to more or less read what you want into it. And that's one of those very big problems that when it comes to biblical study is trying to get past that point where you're not being tainted by what you already think you know. I mean, sometimes, you know, what you think you know is right, but you can't be so self-assured that you are always right that you have not the honest heart for study. Because, I mean, you could have a very solid, you know, knowledge, but you should still have that, you know, that open-mindedness in the back of your mind that, you know, what if something I haven't seen before comes to light? What would happen if I see something in the scriptures that completely counteracts something I always thought was true? I always knew it was true. I've always been told it's true. But then you come across something. It's like, how do you explain it? And I've run across a lot of people that are like, you know, they have like these little questions in their mind about, well, I've seen this. But, you know, from the institution that they belong to, that they have their way of talking around it. So in order to avoid complications and conflicts, they have a way of, you know, attaching to that, because it's very difficult and very painful to rip yourself away from tradition. Tradition can be a big problem. I mean, the things that we've always done, the things we've always known, the things our families taught us, the things that our grandparents did, I mean, these things that have a way of infiltrating your being to become so integrated a part of you, it's almost like trying to rip out an eye to change something that you always thought you knew. I've especially noticed this a lot with, you know, those in the Catholic faith, and that there are so many traditions that are supersede the Bible that have no basis in, you know, biblical teaching, but it's all about tradition, mostly, like with a lot of groups, that this is the way I was. So in order to rip yourself out of that, you risk chastisement from family, rejection of by them, rejection by the people you used to know. So that rejection is a lot of times something that somebody, conscious or not, is something they're not prepared to do. Because a lot of these decisions are conscious, but some of these things are just, they're very latent, because if you try to bring things up with people about the way they look at things, the way they perceive things, you know, you can see it better from an outside perspective, how somebody thinks about something, how somebody sees something. It's very easy seeing it from the outside, but when you're actually looking on the inside, that's the most difficult part for actually seeing that. And I've done that myself. I've changed dramatically in the last, you know, 2 or 3 years. I mean, I was to the point where, you know, there was no love in this any of the congregations I went to, any of the, you know, any of the family I had. It was so dry a religion. It was something I had to do because something was required of me. So when push came to shove, because there was no love in that, it was very easy to fall away. And I did. I was away for a couple of years, off on my own thing, you know, trying to do my own self-exploration, self-study, self-reflection, find out what I believe. That was one of the things that I had to come from. I had to go full circle to actually get deprogrammed for what I used to think, to become, you know, completely open-minded about anything. But once I got that open-mindedness and I finally started to wrap my way back around to try to find my first love again, which never really was my first love in the first place, it was a very eye-opening experience to actually come across a congregation like this, where I could see, you know, things that I always knew that we should do, but I never saw it. It's like people were always all talk. In all the congregations, you know, I attended over the years, it was completely talk. There was absolutely nothing there. I mean, it was like the Church of Sardis, the graveyard dead. You can tell that, you know, there's nothing in there. There's no heart. There's no soul. These were walking dead all throughout the church. And you could see, like, in all the examples of all the people, I mean, they would talk a good talk. But that's where it ended. They said, you know, you need to study for yourself. You need to become more a part of the scriptures. You need to abstain from this. You need to do this. And, you know, one of the things they focused more on was the abstaining. And, you know, abstaining is important. You need to stay away from the things that you need to stay away from, but that was always more important, it seems, from my observations, than what you actually did do. It was like one of those things, like, it's the mentality that you can somehow earn your way in heaven. It completely counteracts that concept of grace, that if you stay away from these things long enough, that you'd be good enough to get in. You got your pre-pass. But that's basically where it ended with that. There was no love in it. There was no joy. There was actually the concept of, like, joy and enjoying your religion, enjoying your relationship with Christ, with God, and that fellowship that you had was a completely foreign concept. And actually, it probably would have been considered almost heretical that you would have been like these religious charismatics to actually enjoy your religion, to to actually enjoy your walk with Christ. It was, he's like, if you're enjoying this, you must be doing something wrong. It's like telling kids to eat your vegetables, you know. If you're not enjoying it, it means it's good for you. It's that complete nonsense that it's very ingrained in a lot of the more conservative congregations I know. You know, but I come from, you know, the idea that, you know, law is very important. And what is the Bible says about truth, you can't go against it. So that whole idea of, like, well, if the center is good, the little bit to the right is even better, maybe far right's even better. That if you, you know, do the things that it says and abstain from, you know, it's better. But what if you add this to it and you deny yourself this and this and this, and it gets just get better to the right. But one of the things I've noticed, you know, since my turnaround, is that since I've come to a more idea that the love is actually an important thing, the joy is an important thing, that I've been stronger than I've ever been before. Back before, you know, when, you know, I considered, like, you know, abstaining was everything, that the idea that, you know, I've noticed that with a love and a joy for the scriptures, for the law, for a relationship with Christ, that once you have a love and a passion for it, it's a lot harder to rip yourself out of it. I mean, it's a lot harder for people to lead you down another road. Once it becomes so ingrained in your persona that this is what brings me happiness, this is what brings me joy, is serving God and doing good for others, taking care of your neighbor, doing all this good work, it actually brings you an extreme amount of joy. That joy should be embraced. The joy of serving, of teaching, of doing, these are the things that will make your religion consume your life, as opposed to the type of religion where you're basically the bench warmer, which is what I grew up around. You go to church on Sunday morning, you go to church on Sunday night, you go to church on Wednesday night, boom, you've done your time, you're good. But when it comes something that is so integrated in your personality and your being that every aspect of your life is affected by it, that you can't do anything, go anywhere, without it affecting you, that the people you come across at work, you're at school, that you have conversations with, and that there is, you know, you have this absolute love and passion, so you have no shame in sharing your faith and sharing your knowledge, sharing your wisdom, telling them, because, you know, this is something I love, this would be something that you would love too, I know you need this. And that's one of the things that in recent years, last couple of years, that I've noticed about myself. It's like, I'm far more zealous in my sharing of the scriptures. I mean, people know me at work as the guy who carries his Bible around with him. I have it in the workshop, you know. You know, when I'm done with the planes, I go in, I have my Bible there, you know. I do some studying. I do all sorts of things. And, you know, there's one guy I know, that he's a repeat customer. He keeps coming in and asking me things because, well, pretty much he likes a good argument, but I'm always willing to, you know, humor him a little bit. So I give him the information that he wants, but he's always surprised that I always have the answer that he wants because he doesn't think I have it. Because he's got one of those preconceived ideas that, you know, what he was always told was true, and that, you know, those out there traditions that, you know, like, well, what about this? It's like, that's a tradition of the Catholic Church that has no bearing in the Bible. He's like, it's not. Everyone knows that. It's like, hold on, let's look. And then it's like, okay. So then he has to go off on some other tangent. But anyway, I digress. Where's that? So that's about the common thread that I've noticed in, because I've been across a few states, I've been to many churches. The one thing I've never really noticed much was a fanatic zealot attitude in the church. It's always been the very stoic, law-abiding, doing what's required of you, and not doing the things that are not required of you, and that was it. That was it. That's all that happened. But, you know, across my times running across other people. There are a lot of more charismatics, but these days it seems to be that they're very much infiltrating into much of what we know as Christianity. All those extreme groups out there that have a very outgoing evangelical spirit, but what they try to express as teaching is not always based on sound scriptural knowledge. So in some way these people are more damaging. The more stoic, you know, right side, conservative, unloving ones, they're at least, you know, very well self-knowledged, and they're not doing any damage to anybody, but they're not doing any real good either, since they're mostly keeping to themselves and not really much energy to get it out. But where you have more damage is the ones that are really super zealous, but it's absolutely based on nothing that is factual. It's all feeling, it's all thought, it's all tradition and basically false doctrine that they have been told and fed over the years that it's a very feel-good type of religion. And whereas they have the idea that, you know, we all have, you know, we're all brothers, we're all sisters, you know, everyone's okay in the eyes of God. This same spirit also creates a spirit of confusion where there's nothing that you can find that is really absolutely solid and founding, and that, you know, people can agree on that this is something that we have to stand on. What you create is a much more wobbly situation where you don't really have a foot to stand on, because you just let people think what they want and they're okay with it. And you have some major groups out there with the same zealous spirit that are quite, you know, drastically growing in numbers. You have the Jehovah's Witness, the Mormons, who have very big outreach programs where they try to get absolutely anybody and everybody they can. They're super zealous about bringing people in, and they're very effective with it. It's one thing that they have going for them is that their numbers do grow very quickly because of their massive outreach. But another thing that's wrong with this is that while their spirit may be right in their desire to spread, their knowledge base is not based on biblical law, on the facts, on the teachings that are sound and binding in the Bible. So, in effect, it's a very damaging thing they're doing. Whereas the one side is not so damaging, but not productive. This side is productive, but it's quite damaging. So it's a very unbalanced scale. So you have a large amount of biblically damaged people coming through, and then you have a very small, not so much growing group that just basically stays there. And maybe, you know, a few stragglers come in, but basically it's pretty much contained to families that have already been there, that traditionally they've been part of this for years. So, you know, this is what's expected of me. So, I've been doing a lot of work with people on both sides of the spectrum lately, where I've been, you know, finding people that are super zealous, but I call them out on certain biblical teachings. It's like, well, what about this? I mean, and they might have an argument, they might take a verse like here or there, but then you go at them with a mountain of evidence. It's like, so does this one little grain right here counteract this complete mountain of evidence? I mean, how do you work your way around that? So, I mean, you can even see examples where in the Bible that a zealous spirit is a very good thing, but it can be very damaging in the wrong hands with the wrong idea, with the wrong knowledge. I mean, look at Paul with his zealous spirit before he became Paul, when he was absolutely zealous about destroying Christianity, that you need to stay with the old school Judaism, and it needs to stay the way it is, and that this sect is very bad, and it's very dangerous, and it must be destroyed. God saw that this zealous spirit was very valuable, it's very good. His zealous spirit is very contagious, so he saw this, what everybody else would see as a very bad and dangerous man, who has a very bad idea, and he said, I can use that guy, and he recruits us for his own good. Straightens out his knowledge, gets him a good knowledge base, and to what's actually true, and then let him go off to do work that is very positive as opposed to negative. But on the other hand, there's the stoic, law-abider, non-active, stagnating guy who has an idea and a real good idea of what the truth is, but it stays with him, and it rots and festers inside him. So, pretty much, have to find out the idea of where you have to find yourself on this spectrum. Because it's easy to go on one side of the spectrum or another. It's very easy to do. Because it seems like a lot of these ideas seem to breed this kind of personality in of themselves. The very zealous person, you know, they want to use their emotions as their guide, whereas the very serious, somber person wants to use the knowledge and law as their guide. But each side also has to come across in a real honest idea, an honest way, to come to the center point in this religious journey that we are in, to use both, because you need both to be able to survive and to bear fruit and to produce. You need to have solid law. You need to have a very joyful, zealous, emotionally charged spirit that it will give you strength to hold to what you are and to hold to the truth, but a desire for knowledge that you don't overlook it, the truth and what is true, what is knowledge, because it's inconvenient. I mean, even truth is not always convenient. Sometimes truth, when it comes, it can be very damaging and to your psyche that you've built up these walls. But it's one of those things that sometimes the truth hurts, and that you have to be honest with yourself to be of that mindset that I need truth, but never lose that spirit that, you know, this is about joy, this is about love, this is about sharing, this is not keeping it to yourself. This is not a super secret society that, I mean, we're a privileged few. This is for everybody. I mean, there are a privileged few, but that's just because of the nature of the thing. But everyone has an open invitation to it. And that's where we got to find ourselves, is putting ourselves in that center where you don't ignore the law, but that you have a joy for it. And that's the one thing that you really can't teach. You can teach knowledge, you can teach facts, but the joy and the love are something you have to learn for yourselves, pretty much. And that's the difficult part, where you have to grow step by step. You start small. You do things. You become active. That's a big one. Stay active. Because if you just warm the benches on Sunday and Wednesday, it does you no good. You need to be active. It needs to be part of your life. It needs to infiltrate everything. It needs to become infectious. It needs to become part of everything you do. It needs to be apparent to everybody you come across that they know who you are. They know what you stand for. They know that you're the guy with the answers. You're the guy I need to come when I have questions. You're the guy that absolutely has a passion for what he knows, so he must have something good, and that he seems to be very sound in what he knows, so he's not going to be somebody that just gives me the information, like all this, you know, wishy-washy information that, you know, it's going to, you know, appease me, but have, you know, a very weak understanding. weak understanding is very easy to argue against. It's very easy to destroy with knowledge. Facts are facts. When you have the information at hand, it's not something that you can easily argue against. And usually an argument against it is something that's just an issue of mind and that you're just too stubborn to pry it out. But, so, we need to have a self-reflection of where we stand. And if we have a weakness in one way or the other, it's definitely important to correct it. And if you correct one, it's easy enough to correct the other. If you want to correct your law, you're going to do more studying, you're going to do more research, you're going to get some joy out of that. You're going to feel good acquiring this more knowledge. So that spirit of joy, of zealousness, that's going to come with it. And if you have an honest spirit of joy and of the desire and the zeal for wanting knowledge, it's going to affect the other way. They don't have to be mutually exclusive, though a lot of times people think that they're easily mutually exclusive, but they don't have to be. It really doesn't. And they seem to go, it adds for much stronger depth in relationship in your religious spirit to make you a more well-rounded and more productive spirit, and to have the knowledge to share that with other people, both on both extremes. The ones who have a weakness in the law, you can teach them, you can show them, and show them where they're lacking in this, and show them where they're wrong. And then you have the other way of showing somebody that's really a hard-nosed stoic that they're dead inside, that they are an empty tomb with all this knowledge that goes to waste. Bring them into the excitement of it. Make them active. Let them know the joy there is in that activity and what they're doing. That's about all I have for you tonight. So if anybody has a desire to become a part of this life, to put on Christ in baptism, or if you had issues that you need to bring forward to share with us, anything you have, any problems, if you need to be restored, we give you that time now.